Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Hey, hey!
Here's John Williams.
Well, I'll let Lori Lightfoot do it in just a second. Hi, this is John. What a weekend we had, and I hope you're going to have a good week. Here we go.
Lord have mercy.
We're here weekdays 1 to 3, Saturdays 10 to noon. When we're not interrupted on Saturdays by Northwestern football, we will be interrupted this weekend. I'm happy to get out of the way for one of our winning football teams. It was a nice weekend for Chicago. The Cubs won, the Bears won. Our three Bears coverage, once again, fantastic after the game. The guys were unhappy once again. That's the way we like them. You'll hear more about that after 1:30. The Cubs won a crazy series. The Bears won, and the Northwestern Wildcats. Dave Ennett doing the call. Victorious as well. Lori Lightfoot, Chicago's mayor, tweeted over the weekend, "Ladies and gentlemen, we have a field goal kicker." Yeah, we do. And we'd be 0-2 if it weren't for him.
I actually said that with, what, you know, like 10 seconds left on the clock. Well, the Bears are 0-2 this season. And then, you know, it was a good thing I said that.
I did a complete emotional reset because I was with you completely. I was like, yep, this is the Bears. This is I'm just amused because I'm not a big enough fan of any of our teams, really, except the ones on this radio station. But I'm just amused sometimes at how wrong people can be about something they absolutely know to be the case. The Bears are the best team in the NFL this year. We have been the worst team in the NFL after two games. We got out of there by the hair of our chinny chin chin. Back to the Cubs for a second. How many runs did the Cubs... Producer Olive, how many runs did the Cubs score this weekend, please?
Friday, the score was 17-8. Saturday, the score was 14-1. Sunday, the score was 16-6.
Wow.
The Cubs' total run production for the weekend, 47 runs, John.
That's insane. Was anybody feeling sorry for the Pittsburgh Pirates? I kind of was.
No. Run it up.
They cut away to Nico Horner's mom and dad in the stands. Just adorable, his sister. Can you imagine that? One minute you're washing dishes, a Subway sandwich up in Topeka or something like that, and the next thing you know, you're on a team going to the playoffs, and you are a key player playing shortstop at Wrigley Field. Pinch me. That's amazing. A kid swinging the bat, too, man. That's fun to watch. So that was our weekend in the city. Speaking of Lori Lightfoot, by the way, I want to start on this now just briefly. We'll talk more about it when we have some time in the 2 o'clock hour. In fact, in just a couple of minutes, we'll pause and visit with a Washington Post reporter about what the president said over the weekend and what happened over the weekend. A major refinery in Saudi Arabia was attacked, so what are we going to do? And a couple of things the president did have said about it are head scratchers. Let's not dwell on that, although he is the leader, but let's just talk about what happened and what the options are in a few minutes. But Lori Lightfoot, Don Kleppen, you just mentioned this, is calling for a ban on the sale of flavored vaping pods, the e-cigarette fluid.
Yes, sir.
That liquid, she says it's a gateway to kids being addicted to electronic cigarettes. And I guess the problem with being addicted to electronic cigarettes is that maybe you'd get addicted to tobacco. So this is all bad. We got to get rid of the flavored vapes. This has been a national conversation, of course. The congressman, Raja Krishnamurthy, was on with us last week. The president is on board on that. Dick Durbin is on board on that. And now in the city of Chicago, we're a progressive bunch here, you know. We're saying, yeah, that's got to go too. I'm still not sure that's the way to go. Here's the question. And this sounds like I'm loading for one side, but so be it. Have you used vaping products to minimize your tobacco use? Because that's the way I always saw them. I thought they were kind of ridiculous. My God, you're like a smokestack, this big fog. But maybe that's cool, and I'm not 17 anymore, right? So you all vape amongst yourselves. But have you used them to minimize your tobacco use? because that's what I thought was, however ridiculous these things look, I thought that was the upside to it. And as long as tobacco is legal, I don't exactly understand why we're getting our undies in a knot about something else that I think is less harmful and is also legal. It seems to me like state, local, national politicians are all getting behind this thing because it's something they can do and they don't seem to be able to do anything anyway. If you really want to eliminate a national public health scourge, then figure out how to stop bullets from hitting kids. That would be a good idea. So if you have used e-cigarettes, if you've been vaping and somehow that has helped you cut your use of tobacco, I would like to know about that. You can text to 312-981-7200. We'll talk about that with you at 2:30. 312-981-7200. Let's start the conversation with you texting 312-981-7200.
So just a quick comment on that. You know, there's been a lot of speculation on whether it's actually related to vaping, those six deaths. And I have a friend who's a surgeon, so I thought, well, she's in the medical field. I'll ask her about this. And I told her that our listeners were calling in suspicious about the causes of those deaths and if vaping was used as a form of propaganda for Democrats. And she said, no, she was 110% sure. She goes, and this is in a friendly setting, so it's like there's no, I guess I don't think that there's any political drive for her to tell me this, but basically 110% sure that those six deaths were related to vaping because there were no other health issues.
Yeah, but I'll bet six people in the last year, because this is this year we're talking about, I'll bet six people this year have died because of the use of aluminum ladders.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm sorry for y'all, but I just don't see the crisis in it. I do not have teenagers. I'm sure my thoughts about this would be a little more urgent if I had teenagers. But right now, I just kind of don't get it. And I also think this is what happens. Then people will say, okay, I can't get my flavored vapes, and you may be 40 and feel this way. I'll buy them from a guy I know. And now you're just driving everybody to a completely unregulated black market.
Totally. And they say, I think that's a part of it too, John, is that it's like some of these carts that people are using are not regulated. They're not official and nobody knows what's in them, you know, that's being produced. And I think that unknown factor and is part of the fear of what's causing this stuff. And that's what's driving the action.
All right. So we'll get to all of that in the 2:30 segment. But if you want to comment now, text to 312-981-7200. I want to talk about what happened in Saudi Arabia. We'll do that with a reporter from the Washington Post after this on WGN. What happened over the weekend? Tell us about this drone attack at this Saudi oil field.
Well, we can't even say if it was a drone attack yet. There are multiple accounts and multiple different versions. What we do know is that in the early hours of Saturday, an enormous series of explosions in perhaps, you know, the world's most critical spot for oil production basically rocked a major facility run by Saudi oil giant Aramco. The attacks were claimed by a group in Yemen called the Houthis, who are rebels there who have been locked in a long-standing, close to half a decade war with the Saudis and their allies in the region. And the Houthis said that they send drones in to attack this spot. The next day, though, the United States, and then following that later on, the Saudis, or insisting that it wasn't exactly a Houthi strike, it displayed sophistication, and for other signs of it being a strike from Iran, which is a country, of course, very much in the crosshairs right now of our geopolitics, and also a country that backs the Houthis in the war in Yemen. So now we have this very complicated scenario where we don't know. The U.S. is not convinced that they were drone strikes. They think they were perhaps cruise missile strikes. And so we're still waiting to get a clearer picture. The Saudis and the U.S. are pretty confident in blaming Iran. Countries elsewhere, from Europe to China to Russia, and other sort of regional actors, are being more circumspect about pinning blame on any one particular country or faction at this present moment. Some people sort of are going ahead and believing that it was the Houthis. Others are suggesting that the attack originated from a base in Iraq manned by a pro-Iranian militia. So as you can see, we're just really now tangled up in the messy geopolitics of the Middle East, which have only gotten more messy in the years during the Trump administration.
The Houthis and the Saudis have been punching and counterpunching for quite some time now. Is it, though, the worst-case scenario that this was, in fact, Iran? And if it was Iran, then what's our next move?
Well, it's a very complicated and loaded question. If it is determined confidently by the Trump administration that and the Saudis that there's clear evidence that the Iranians ordered a strike and carried out this strike directly, you would imagine that they would want to take punitive measures. What those are, it's hard to tell. Trump is not eager to get entangled in a military conflict with the Iranians, as he's made clear over the summer, but he's also already deployed a lot of the other tools of pressure that he has in his toolkit on the Iranians. They're right now slapped with really sweeping, asphyxiating sanctions on the Iranian economy. There's sanctions targeting various organs of the Iranian regime. And so Trump's move for maneuvering is not particularly great. It's also compounded by the fact that on the international stage, the U.S. and Saudi Arabia don't have as much credibility as they may have had in the past. So it's a complicated political set piece as well. You're not going to get very much joy in the UN Security Council from the Russians and Chinese, and you may also trigger an incredibly heated debate in Washington over Trump's ability to act in the first place. Why does the United States need to react on behalf of Saudi Arabia?
Absolutely, I'm interested in the answer to that question, and I know that the president, you know, he barks loud, but his bite isn't very big, which, frankly, I'm okay with, although I don't see the point in barking so loudly then. He tweeted over the weekend, Saudi Arabia oil supply was attacked. There is reason to believe that we know the culprit and are locked and loaded depending on verification. But we're waiting to hear from the kingdom as to who they believe was the cause of this attack and under what terms we would proceed. So two points about that. One is the president makes it sound, and it only makes it sound, like, boy, oh boy, we, the United States, are going to hit back hard. And number two, it makes it sound like we're getting our marching orders from a very corrupt and some people would say despicable Saudi kingdom. So what's that all about, for crying out loud?
And the optics of it are very strange. And you know, of course, this is not the first time President Trump has issued very bellicose threats toward Iran on Twitter. He's climbed down in the past. You could read it as the president just trying to say something about, because he actually took quite some time to react to the strike. The strike was in the early hours of Saturday morning. His tweet came out on Sunday evening. There's been prior to all this, there was a lot of speculation about Trump meeting the Iranian president, Hassan Rouhani, next week at the UN General Assembly. And so there was speculation over the weekend that Trump, you know, far from threatening retaliatory action, was trying to keep the door open for some sort of meeting with the Iranians. That looks far more unlikely now. And whether this is just a question of the president talking tough and perhaps not biting, no, his bark being louder than his bite, that very well could be the case. But there will be pressure in Washington from the more establishment, hawkish wing of the Republican Party to be tough on Iran, to respond against this kind of assault, not just on the Saudis, but on, you know, the overall global economy.
Well, Sean, I sometimes like to say 1 to 100. 100 is absolutely, we are going to fire missiles into Iran. 0 is we're not. Sean, where do you think we are on that continuum of a direct U.S. military response to this?
Well, with my deeply uneducated guess, I hesitate to ever. I would say it's somewhere around 30 to 40. The optics of the situation suggest that, you know, Trump wants to, and you know the fact that he got so close to striking the Iranians earlier this summer, and had you know people like Bolton and Secretary of State Pompeo really walking him down the path toward concerted action against Iranian targets that would have killed Iranian soldiers or perhaps even civilians, we don't know, suggests that, you know, maybe it would be harder for him this time to back down from that. But all we're hearing right now is that within the administration, certainly in the Pentagon, there are voices of restraint. This is, of course, not an attack on the U.S. directly. This is an attack on a Saudi position.
Yeah.
And especially as
5 or 6% of the oil. It's 5 or 6% of the oil's petroleum production, correct?
Right. So what it seems to have taken out, at least for the time being, some half of Saudi Arabia's daily output, which is roughly sort of 5.7 million barrels a year. That I think their overall output, the Saudis contribute something like 10% of oil in the global economy.
Right.
So it's 5%. Obviously, there are ways to offset those losses in the short to medium term by tapping into other reserves, and so it may not be as destabilizing as people have made it out to be in the long run.
Yeah, everybody take a breath. Sean Theroux's piece in the Washington Post, along with Adam Taylor, who writes in the Foreign Affairs Department on these subjects, are both online and in print today. Sean Theroux is a foreign affairs reporter at the Washington Post. I'm out of time, Sean, but well done. We'll call you again. I appreciate your expertise today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us, sir. It's 1:31 on WGN. Into the newsroom. We've got lots to cover coming up. Thank you, Sam. Sam, I'm thinking of Sam Panionovic. Thank you, Don Flevin.
Oh, that happens.
Well, don't be so sad. But
we wear the same glasses.
Well, Sam had been texting me during the Bears game about how the game was going and that his prediction was going to be true. He predicted that the Bears were going to win 17-13. The final was 16-14. I told him I'm never going to use him again.
Too far off.
He got the outcome right, and he 1 point off of each score. So not too bad, Sam Panionovic. He'll say hi to us again real soon. You are continuing to text to 312-981-7200. You are continuing to text to 312-981-7200 about has vaping helped you or hurt you? The mayor of Chicago wants to get rid of it. Before we talk about Danny Solis, interesting story in the Tribune today about his pension. Let's go to a Chicago area bar. After the Bears beat the Broncos 16-14 on a last-second field goal, three Grabowskis, Hampton, Kozlowski, Obradovich, predictably, despite the win, are unhappy. On today's edition of This American Bears Life, we listen over their shoulders in a Bridgeview bar.
How to put it, but anyway, just what I saw out there today. If you think that this kid is going to lead us, we're putting all our marbles on this kid, this quarterback taking us to the Super Bowl and winning it. It's
zero
just
chance.
Not going to happen.
Hey, you talk about getting out of town with your underwear on. That's about what
they didn't
did
have their underwear on. Hey. They left without it on, but we won.
The officials gave them that game, OB. That I don't know if it was a touchdown or not, but it wasn't a roughing the passer, and I don't know if there was a second left.
Wow. We got 14 games to go, and we had a quarterback today. You saw it right in front of you, and that's what we've got to go 14 more games
Mitch
with.
Stinkbinski. He stinks.
He is horrible.
I don't care. He is horrible, Ed.
I think with about maybe 18 seconds to go in the game, he finally broke 100 yards passing. Patrick Mahomes, in the second quarter, threw for over 400 yards and three touchdowns for the Kansas City Chiefs.
Joe Flacco, who's 108 years old, threw for 292 yards. Crying out loud, it's embarrassing.
What I'm telling you,
we'll take the win.
But congratulations,
it's a win.
Doinkless. It was a doinkless effort again.
A double doinkless effort by the Bears, and that's after a win. Nothing more entertaining than the Three Bears postgame shows on WGN Radio, featuring Glenn Kozlowski, Dan Hampton, Ed Obradovich. 1:43 now. Here's a headline in the Chicago Tribune. Disgraced former alderman Daniel Solis collected nearly $95,000 annual city pension, could keep receiving taxpayer-funded payments for life. Gregory Pratt, it says, is the byline on that, and Greg's on line 7. Hi, Greg, it's John, and you're on WGN. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for jumping in here on the radio with us. Let's back up before we get to the 95,000 and talk about what is it that Danny Solis did. He was wearing a wire for the FBI, right?
Sure. Danny Solis is at the center of the biggest corruption scandal to hit Chicago in many, many years. Danny got caught by the FBI allegedly pursuing prostitution services and trading favors for Viagra, which he called his blue medicine. And the feds asked him to cooperate, and he did. And he wore a wire for him for 2 years.
And that leads us to the Burger King parking lot, correct?
That, you know, I'm not sure it's not quite a straight line, because there's still things we don't know about the feds. We do know about the feds' investigation of Alderman Ed Burke. One of the things they've got Burke on that they allege is that Burke extorted the Burger King in his ward that wanted permits, and he extorted them. They were listening to his phone calls. It's not clear what their probable cause was to be listening to those phone calls. Where Solis is cooperating against Burke, and where it's known that Solis and Burke cross paths, is at the old post office downtown, where Solis was trying to get the developers to hire his law firm. And he said that he told Danny, who was wearing a wire, that they hadn't made the cash register ring yet, so they weren't going to get on the agenda.
I thought it was the Burger King that connected the two and led to his cooperation, but who knows what was captured on the wire, because he wore it, did you not say, for a couple of years?
He did wear a wire for a couple of years, which, you know, I'm at City Hall every day, and it scared just about everybody here when they found out.
Yeah, I'll bet. But really, and I don't know if Danny Solis is the biggest fish here, right? Like, you thought, oh my gosh, he wore the wire, and now who knows? Is it Madigan? Is it Burke? Who's going to be caught somehow or another? I know those are different spheres, but I mean, who knows what sort of business goes through Danny Solis or that he's privy to? So he may be a very interesting character. And then you say, but why was Solis doing that? And it was, oh my gosh, they've got him, as you said, maybe trading political favors for Viagra or visits with prostitutes, which is just so low ball. I mean, when are these guys going to learn?
Could you imagine losing everything over Viagra?
I know. I mean, well, yeah, it's not like you can't get it. You can get women for money and you can get pills for money. And neither of them, my understanding is, are that expensive. So I guess that's just what happens. These guys' brains get polluted with the power that they have long enough. They think, yeah, but I don't have to. Do they pause for a moment to think about the embarrassment or the jail or the revenue that they're going to lose? Who knows?
You know, what's interesting about that, too, is that Danny Solis got appointed because his predecessor in city council got himself indicted and thrown into prison.
So then he's making $95,000 a year, something like that?
Yeah, so this is a wild little piece of the puzzle, is that because he hasn't been charged with a crime yet and he hasn't been convicted of a crime, Solis gets to keep his pension, which he would lose if the Fed charged him with a crime. But because he's cooperated, they still haven't charged him with a crime. So this summer, he applied to get his pension from the city, and the city said, of course. The city pension fund said, of course.
Maybe their hands are tied. Maybe they don't like the look of that either, but what are they going to do? Maybe they have no option, right?
I don't think they had an option, in fairness to the pension fund.
Yeah. So is he not on the... What is he doing for a living right now, Danny Solis?
Danny Solis is a man of mystery these days. It's actually, again, at City Hall, a topic of conversation is where's Danny and what he's up to. It's not really clear, because he's been ostracized by everybody here. I mean, nobody wants to hear from him or talk to him. And once it was revealed he was wearing a wire, he never came back. I actually think somebody might have punched him if he came down to City Hall.
He does not work for the city. He's not on city council anymore.
He's not on any payrolls. He stepped down in May. He's collecting a pension. I know he went to a wedding in Puerto Rico over the summer. But other than that, he hasn't really been heard from very much.
What percentage of his salary does he get in the pension?
By 80%.
80%?
Which,
for life?
For life. which they made a law in 1991 that gives the alderman 80% after 20 years, and which is the full salary for them, the full pension salary for them, whereas a normal city worker has to work 30 years to get 70%.
I was unaware of that, too. I was unaware of that, too. But if the FBI, so what does the FBI do? What's the switch they flip then that goes away?
He has to get convicted of a crime related to his duties.
Ah, which is those are two things then, right? Convicted, and it has to be relative to his duties. So if he was guilty of, say, felony possession of a gun or, you know, whatever. I just draw felony out of a hat there. But some other felony not related to his duties, then that would not cancel his pension, correct?
Yeah, I don't think it would, no.
All right. And is the FBI going slow on this? Maybe that's the deal they've cut. All right, you'll get your pension for life, but we really need you to cooperate. Wear a wire. And think of what he did. Wearing a wire for 2 years. 2 years in the hallowed halls of some of the most powerful people in the city. That must have been a, I have no sympathy for the man, but that must have been a very anxious 2 years for him, right?
It was shocking because of what you say, but because I would see him several times a month here at City Hall, and he always looked like he was George Clooney, you know, just a good-looking older guy, carefree, happy. All the time, and then you found out when the affidavit got revealed accidentally, you found out that he'd been living with all the stress, and it's actually pretty remarkable.
Yeah, yeah. I don't handle stress. I mean, if I was wearing a wire for the feds, my $95,000 a year pension hung in the balance to say nothing of maybe me being incarcerated. After one day, people would say, "How are you, John?" And I'd say, "I'm not wearing a wire. Don't take my pension." I mean, wait. No, wait. I would be a terrible plant. Is it possible, do you think, Greg, that the FBI will never press charges? They'll never get a conviction? That's the deal?
I think that's very possible. And from what I hear, that's very possible. It would be unprecedented. It would seem to be unprecedented. I'm sure there probably is something where somebody did that. But for context, I keep thinking about the Flores twins, which is a couple of gangbangers from Little Village who cooperated against El Chapo Guzman. And even they had to eat, you know, El Chapo Guzman, the biggest drug lord in the whole world.
Yeah.
And even they had to eat a charge in response for their cooperation. Now, Ed Burke is a big fish, but he's not a bigger fish than El Chapo. And Solis isn't anywhere near as in danger as those two twins against El Chapo. So I'm not entirely sure how you justify giving him no charge ever, and he gets to keep being on the taxpayer's dime for the rest of his life. But we'll see what the feds do.
Boy, I'd be spending that money. Oh, I guess they could make it retroactive to when the crimes were committed, though, right?
The charge?
Yeah. Well, I mean, say they do convict him. I wonder if they would go back and claw back the pension that he received back to the time of the commission of the crime.
I doubt that. I don't think they could do that. Yeah. I think it would just be going forward thing. I've heard of some government trying to claw back people's pensions after they get convicted and have been collecting, and it doesn't work out that way.
Yeah.
Probably some legal mumbo-jumbo.
Well, then I would go to a wedding in Puerto Rico or someplace if I were him. I would be spending that money while I can get it. Danny Solis has not been heard from for a while. There he is in the Chicago Tribune today. Greg Pratt's very interesting story. Greg, thanks for your time today. I really appreciate you joining us.
Thank you, sir.
Remember, if you do not already, today would be a good day to subscribe to a newspaper.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to. Here's John Williams.
All right, let's get this second hour of the show on the road, shall we? It's 2:09. I'm John. We're in the Skyline Studio downtown. It's not as pretty as it was over the weekend. The word is you're hearing that it's going to get better, and we're going to have a really swell week, and hopefully things will go as well this week as they did for our teams this weekend. Our news click at WGNradio.com will ask you, what do you think of Lori Lightfoot's effort to take this national dialogue about vaping and bring it to Chicago? Be careful, Lori, because when we had Congressman Raja Krishnamurthy on the Schaumburg Democrat. He was saying, by golly, we're going to save the people from the scourge of vaping. And people called and texted in, and they said, not so fast there, Charlie. His name isn't Charlie, but who can save Raja Krishnamurthy? And I think in the name of public health, a lot of these people are going to be surprised how many people are not behind it. We were all about the tobacco settlement, or we're all about cracking down on cigarettes, but vaping is not in that same space. I've been asking you to text to 312-981-7200. I have pages of text. I'll print them out because we don't want me reading the text screen because some of it's not nice. But the ones that are germane to the topic I have in front of me, and by and large, you are saying the vapes are working for me. I quit smoking. 312-981-7200. More about that after 2:30. Lori Lightfoot, if you're listening, give us a call. Okay, listen to this. This has been going on last week and the week before that and for a really long time. This is how they do business in Great Britain. You think our government's kind of wackadoodle sometimes? Here's just an average day on the farm.
Mr. Stewart, if you don't like it, you're perfectly entitled to your view. I couldn't give a flying flamingo what your view is.
That's the Speaker of their House, John Bercow. CNN added the music. Then they storm off. They're all walking out. I'm always reading the faces of the other politicians. Are they doing a... or are they smiling? Or are they angry? Here's just another series of lines from that guy and the reaction from his colleagues in England.
What do I say to the Chancellor of the Duchy? That when he turns up at our children's school as a parent, he's a very well-behaved fellow. He wouldn't dare behave like that in front of Colin Hall, and neither would I. Don't gesticulate. Don't rant. Spare us the theatrics. Behave yourself. Be a good boy, young man. Be a good boy.
In our studio is Peter Brisseret. He is an assistant professor of public policy at the University of Chicago. To tell us a little bit about the British House of Commons, that's the body you were listening to. Professor, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Where are you from?
I was born in Louisiana, but my parents are English, and that's where I grew up.
You studied at Oxford.
I did.
You're now teaching public policy at the University of Chicago.
That's correct.
Well, then you're uniquely positioned to experience two of the most supranationalist governments in the world right now, aren't you?
There's no safe haven. My wife is Swedish, and that's looking like the only safety valve at the moment.
Well, maybe people agree with the positions these people are taking. First of all, just give us a comment on what we just heard.
Yes, so that, I believe, took place possibly last Monday. I remember hearing the same thing. It was during the course of a debate in the House of Commons over whether Parliament should take control of its legislative agenda away from the government. And the idea was that Parliament or some members of the House of Commons, our lower house, wanted to force the government to request an extension to the UK's departure from the European Union, which is supposed to take place on the 31st of October. The government does not want that. It wants the flexibility to walk away, potentially with no agreement. And it was a very feisty debate, as your viewers probably heard.
So we'll talk about that underlying issue in just a minute. But I'm as interested in the sort of comportment of the members of the body itself. Is that how they always do things over there?
It's a rowdy institution. I mean, the government and the main opposition party are positioned facing each other in this naturally kind of adversarial posture.
This is the House of Commons.
That's correct.
It is your House of Representatives relative to the way we run things.
That's exactly right.
You have a Senate as well. That's the House of Lords.
We have an upper chamber, an unelected upper chamber, which does not represent a particular geography. They're unelected and in many cases appointed by a government.
So they don't have the same votes that our Senate does or that your House of Commons does. Then.
That's correct. Over time, over a long period of time, their powers have eroded largely to delaying.
So the sausage gets made in the House of Commons then. That's where the actual votes take place. And how many members are there?
Give or take 630. It depends from year to year, depending on districts.
You're a smaller country than ours considerably, but you have 200 more elected representatives in your house?
there are so many different points of view and people who have things to say.
And they face each other? Is that what happens?
Yes, the House is organized kind of two sides facing each other. So the government will be directly opposite the main opposition party, which at the moment is the Labour Party, and debates between the leaders of the parties will be them facing each other across a table, essentially.
And here, I don't know who's stiffer. I had the impression that maybe the Brits were, but in the United States, I think if we saw that sort of behavior, and we sometimes do in the House, but if that was happening in our Senate or House of Representatives, we would really look askance at that. How do the British people feel about that sort of dialogue?
I certainly think that it's not impressive for an ordinary member of the public to see what's going on in there. And there are plenty of members of the House of Commons who would acknowledge that, you know, that kind of raucous behavior belongs in some kind of debating club. It's not very seemly that elected members deciding the fate of the country should be jeering at each other and hurling insults.
But they've done that prior to Brexit, whatever the other issues would have been. That's kind of the way they do it, right?
Of course. It's a performance.
It is a performance. And so you might applaud something that's good, but if I'm sitting in that body and I don't like what the other side is saying, it would be within the keeping of the running of that house for me to go, hey, boo, no. That would be... People would turn their heads in the Congress of the United States. There, that's just the way people express themselves.
That's right. But let me tell you, there are certain lines that you cannot cross. For example, you are not allowed to accuse someone of lying. An accusation by one member of the House against the other of lying has to be withdrawn. The Speaker will call on the member who made the accusation to withdraw. And if not, they can be told to leave the House. And there are sanctions in place. So shouting, for example, you lie, would be an actionable offense in the House of Commons.
That was shouted at our president,
indeed,
famously.
Exactly.
So this John Bercow guy, the guy that we were listening to, he's the Speaker of the House of Commons, or was, right?
He will be until October 31st. He chose his date of departure strategically.
Why do you say that?
October 31st is the date on which the UK is supposed to leave the European Union, and he wants, I think, to ensure that he's still, if you can call it that, steering the ship right up until the end date.
Well, we don't get to pick when our politicians come and go. It's set in stone when the election is and when the inauguration is.
That's right. But the UK has a parliamentary democracy where the government, the members of the government are themselves elected members of parliament, and the government is drawn from the House of Commons, and the timing of an election is dictated partly by a limit on the number of years that a government can be in place, which is 5. But historically, the government can choose to call an election whenever it wanted, and dissolve Parliament.
Not beyond the 5-year.
Not beyond the 5 years.
But if you felt it was politically advantageous to do it now, while we've got a good situation, you can run another 5 years on the meter, right?
That's the thinking. And there are plenty of examples of prime ministers who had foreign policy adventures that went well and decided that that was a fruitful time to call
good
an
time
election.
To do another 5.
Precisely.
Okay, I'm not a big fan of that.
Well, it depends. I mean, another feature of it which you might find more attractive is that just as the government has the option to call an election, if a majority of members of parliament, again, yeah. This is historic because there's a current set of caveats which I'll go into only if you invite me to why that's not feasible. But in general, if the majority of members of the House of Commons don't have confidence in the government, they can bring the government down and force an election.
Ah, so where today Democrats control the House of Representatives in the United States, they're not going to pull off an impeachment. That would require the Senate vote. But if they could say, let's just have another election, would it be an election for themselves or could it be for the president? Could it be for the prime minister?
It would be an election for the entire House of Commons, which means that when you call it, you want to be pretty sure about your prospects. So it's a double-edged sword. Both the prime minister and the executive have the ability to call it, but also the House of Commons collectively, by virtue of a majority, also have the ability.
But would their calling it, would that be an election for the prime minister
as
well?
That would be an election for every member of the House of Commons.
Including the prime minister.
Precisely, because the outcome of the election will determine which party or parties will then hold the position.
Well, that would be an interesting end around in America for Democrats who feel like they want to get rid of the president but really have no mechanism to. Even if they drop articles, the Senate won't do it. But if they felt there was a sort of popular support for that, they could do that if it were England, huh?
That's true, but they themselves would find themselves in the crossfire. So, I mean, if they thought that they were confident enough of their prospects, then perhaps they would wish to do it. But these things can backfire. For example, Theresa May had that experience when she called a snap election a couple of years ago and lost her own majority.
When I look at the faces of the members of the House of Commons, the 600 of them, we don't see them all. We only see, I would say, 100 or so. The body must be vast.
It's a fairly crowded room. If the place is full, there's only standing room downstairs, and then there are viewing galleries on top.
Standing room for the members themselves?
Even some members have to stand.
Bummer. And because they all got fancy chairs in the United States. But I'm looking at their faces, and I don't know if the, say, opposition party that's doing the grumbling, and then they all stormed out. The one group of people got up and said, that's it, we're out of here, Bob, and they walked out. And the other group of guys were just standing there, and gals. And I was reading their faces, like, this is theater, and it's humorous, and we know this is a show. Or they're really ticked off. It's hard to tell how they genuinely feel.
Well, it is hard to tell because, on the one hand, I think, as you may know, the government has prorogued Parliament, meaning that they've said, right, you guys, we're not going to sit for a few weeks, and there can be no meeting of Parliament. And so, that process means that if there were any chance of Parliament meeting now to debate Brexit, that chance has been taken away by the government. I mean, it's a little more complicated than that, but if you're a member of the opposition party, you're screaming that this is a threat to democracy and the government is being very heavy-handed. And I saw some of them holding up placards, saying that democracy had been betrayed.
But the other side said that, in fact, they take a break over that period of time anyway, right?
That's right. Again, it's a slightly tricky one because the timetable around the fall is a little strange. MPs come back for normally a week at the beginning of September, and then they're supposed to go away anyway for the rest of the month to do their party conferences and figure out what their policies and programs will be. Now, on the one hand, the government has merely extended the number of days that period would have lasted by 5. But there was another feature. Some people on the opposition side are saying, well, we would have voted to suspend the recess for party conferences because it would be our duty to stay in Westminster and debate this. Of course, members of the government say, yeah, right. And then another feature was that if in that week, at the beginning of the month, you were trying to get a bill through to stop the government doing something that it wanted to do, if you didn't get it done by the time Parliament were prorogued, all that progress would be lost and you'd have to start again.
In our studio is Peter Brisseret. He is an assistant professor of public policy at the University of Chicago. He's British-born. He's a U.S. and British citizen. He teaches policy at the University of Chicago. He's an Oxford man and a Princeton man, too, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so then let's pause. Come back and tell me the Brexit debate. I mean, so that's just who the players are. Come back and just tell me a little bit about the Brexit debate and the timeline and where Boris is and where John is and where you are on this in a minute. In our studio, Peter Brisseret is a professor of public policy at the University of Chicago. We've been talking about the British House of Commons because of the craziness you see in the news or videos of how they're all hummer, 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 hummer. It sounds sometimes like a Monty Python skit. Meets the Muppets, meets the U.S. Congress. That's what the House of Congress or the House of Commons over there looks and sounds like. Peter's been filling us in on how that body works. But a lot of the grumbling now, of course, Peter, is about Brexit. I just have a couple of minutes, so we won't get into all of the details. But October 31st is the deadline. Boris Johnson is there because he said we will get a deal done come hell or high water, right?
He said we will leave, do or die. That may involve a deal or it might not.
Right. But either way, we will not be part of the European Union November 1st.
That is his intention.
And in fact, you guys could leave the EU tomorrow if you wanted, right? I mean, isn't it maybe you won't have a deal or any favorable deals with your partners in Europe, but it's up to the UK to do whatever it wants, isn't it?
Well, there is a withdrawal process that was set out in the Lisbon Treaty. So there is kind of a managed process for negotiation. Of course, that process, if it had been followed, we would have left at the end of March. So the only reason that we're still in the European Union is because the House of Commons couldn't come to an agreement on the form of the Prime Minister's deal that she, Theresa May, Boris Johnson's predecessor, had tried to negotiate. So she negotiated this deal in Europe. She came back to the House of Commons, said, what do you think? And, you heard what they had to say about
that. Ever since, we've been in a stalemate. What's the biggest sticking point?
The biggest sticking point is the Northern Irish border. So, imagine the exercise where you take a map of the UK. So, England, Scotland, Wales, Northern Ireland. And I tell you, you have to somehow draw a border between the UK and the rest of Europe, but you're not allowed to put any kind of border between Northern Ireland and the Republic, and you can't put a border between Northern Ireland and the rest of the UK. And at some point, you're going to say, this is just an impossible exercise. Why are you asking me to do this?
Logistically, strategically, it's just impossible to do.
It's impossible because if you believe that you do not want a hard border between Northern Ireland and the Republic, this goes back at least to the Good Friday Agreement. So the desire not to have any friction between the between Northern Ireland and the Republic for reasons that I'm sure many of your viewers will appreciate and I'm happy to get into. On the other hand, there is a Northern Irish political party which has been supporting the minority Conservative government, which views any change in the way that Northern Ireland is treated vis-a-vis the rest of the UK as unacceptable because it represents kind of a pulling away of Northern Ireland from the rest of the UK. So you have to chop somewhere if you're going to chop, but there's nowhere to chop that doesn't leave people very, very upset.
So what's going to happen?
Well, that's the problem. So, you know, any one outcome is very unlikely, but something has to happen. This is
any
the
one
problem.
Outcome is very...
Yeah,
no,
and
no,
I
an outcome is likely. Indeed. Something is going to happen.
So I appreciate the, you know, the irony of saying that, and that's the problem, is anything is possible, but everything is very unlikely. So right now, we don't know. The government, Boris Johnson is currently, he would like us to believe, negotiating in Europe. He failed to show up for a press conference this morning in his host country, but supposedly he's hard at work behind the scenes. Now, Parliament passed a law that says to the Prime Minister, if you don't secure a new agreement, and or if Parliament fails to pass any agreement that you bring back, you have to go and ask for an extension. Now, Europe could say, we've had enough of your extensions, go out. But that's kind of where we sit right now. So people are asking, you know, will the Prime Minister find a way to get around this obligation or will he have to do it and then we'll have a general election?
Well, I'm not a big unilateral guy. I like to see the United States, for instance. I would assume if I were British, I'd like to see the Brits have as many relationships with other countries as possible. Is it possible that, in fact, for instance, right now, are you all operating as if none of this ever happened? You still have the same trade relationships and travel opportunities between the two countries as you did before, right?
That's right. So a European can come to the UK. You remember someone from the UK.
So if this were extended in perpetuity, I mean, just never get it done. Just kick the can down the road forever. Americans will show you how to do it if you need a blueprint on that, because that's how we handle some of our most intractable problems.
Well, the nature of leaving with no deal on the 31st is that all of the arrangements that support that kind of free movement will be yanked out from underneath us. And similarly, for members of the UK, people, you know, British citizens who are living in Europe, they're going to face similar difficulties, access to healthcare. So that will be taken from us.
Yeah. All right. Well, today is September 16th. October 31st is right there. So, Peter, will you sort of follow this with us and join us again?
Gladly.
Peter Buisseret is an assistant professor of public policy at the University of Chicago, talking to us about the House of Commons and Brexit. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
I think I know why you're playing this, Elif.
The Cars guitarist and frontman Rick Ocasek passed away yesterday due to unknown causes yet. His exact age was also unknown, but speculation is that he was in his mid-70s.
My whole life I've said Rick Ocasek. Everybody today is saying Rick Ocasek because I guess that's how he pronounces it. The correct pronunciation is a soft A. I had no idea. Only now do we... get it right. I was never a big Cars fan. I always thought the music was cool and fun. It just wasn't my band, but now I'm listening to it. I'm sure if you you should do this, Elif, just before, if you get a chance before we're done on Spotify or Apple, you know, iTunes, I'll bet his songs are trending up, right? More sales, more listens, more downloads.
Yeah, most likely.
Rick Ocasek passed away. I thought I heard 74, but then again, and it's funny too, because when you see any of these guys, he was never an especially healthy looking guy. And I was talking to my wife this morning about the number of noteworthy musicians of that era who passed away. And she said, well, they're getting older. And if you think about it, the lives they led did not lead to longevity, which is weird then because you say, right, how are any of them alive? Wait, Mick Jagger is still alive. How are any of the Rolling Stones alive? People that, like, their roadies should all be dead just for the kind of lifestyles they led. But there they are. Rick Ocasek. Kasek or Kasek, but I've been told it's not Kasek. It's 242. I just wanted to mention a couple of other things. Oh, yeah. The president over the weekend, you know, we visited with a Washington Post reporter about what happened in Saudi Arabia, what the U.S. response should be, what the president meant when he tweeted out about it. And I won't go back into that subject here. But he also tweeted in defense of Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh that people should stop going after him. And if they're going to keep lobbing these accusations at him that he sexually abused people when he was in college, that he should start to sue. He said Brett Kavanaugh should start suing for libel, or the Justice Department should come to his rescue. The lies being told about him are unbelievable. False accusations without recrimination. When does it stop? They are trying to influence his opinions. Can't let that happen. Exclamation point. President of the United States. But y'all had to laugh because if you saw the first version of that, you know he said that Brett Kavanaugh should stop suing for libel. Liable means responsible by law. You could be liable for financial damages if you own a bar and someone gets drunk and then they crash the car. You could be liable for damages. And he typed liable. He typed the wrong word. And I don't think that's autocorrect. I don't think when you're misspelling libel, it automatically goes to liable. He typed in liable. He meant libel and he since fixed it. That's the main thing. Actually, nothing's the main thing here. This is irrelevant. He's suggesting that we'll do what the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia does with our military in response to the oil well. That's the oil refinery. That's a significant tweet. That one matters. The one about Brett Kavanaugh doesn't matter so much. But for some reason, I can't help myself. I see liable and I go, that's the wrong word. You meant libel. Libel means exposing someone to public contempt without just cause. You might libel someone by falsely accusing them of a crime. He meant that one, not the other one. Okay, lots of calls and texts about what Lori Lightfoot said. Steve, you want to go first? You're on WGN Radio. What was your thought, Steve? You are on the air. Hi.
Well, first of all, I'll get to my story, but I still swear to God you're Alan Alda.
I have not heard that in a while, but every time I'm new to a radio show or station, the first calls I get are, is that Hawkeye? Isn't that funny?
It's hilarious, but you sound just like him. So anyways, here's my story. I'm 60 years old. I started smoking when I was 30 because I was an idiot. I've tried to stop in the past. It hasn't worked. About 4 months ago, I finally got talked into trying to vape. So I'm not doing any of the garbage stuff. I'm doing the straight, just vape stuff. The cool thing is I've actually got taste buds back. I can smell again. I was smell blind for quite a while.
Wow.
The best part about it was I started at 0.5% or whatever they want to call it,
yeah.
Nicotine. In the last 3 months, I've dropped it. I went down to 35. I went to 25. I'm now at 0.12. Eventually, I'll get down to zero, and hopefully, once the nicotine's out, I'm completely done. So it's actually been a great transformation for me.
How old are you?
I am 60.
What is? I think you said that. Pardon me. And what flavors do you use?
I try just to keep everything that's kind of as close to smoking as possible with a little bit of flavor. Here's the funny thing. When I first started with a little bit of flavor, I couldn't taste it. About a week later, I finally started tasting it. But what now it's up, it's a non-menthol with a taste of caramel in it.
Non-menthol caramel. Okay, very good. Hey, I'm really glad you called, Steve. And I'm happy for you. I'm happy for your health.
All right, brother. Nice talking to you.
It's nice talking to you, too. 630 texted in. Hey, John, 2 years from cigarettes, thanks to vaping. 630, another line. I use electronic cigarettes and have not smoked cigarettes for 5 years. I'm 51 and smoked cigarettes until my late 40s. Vaping did the trick. John, how is it we can immediately ban vaping when a few people are killed, but we can't do anything about guns that cause thousands of deaths? John, my husband and I just quit smoking cigarettes this year using Juul. We use tobacco-flavored ones, and I never thought he would quit. I'm so glad. Another 630-er says, I use an e-cigarette when I quit smoking 6 years ago. I used e-cigarettes for about 6 months, quit smoking December 23rd after 40 years, and never had another cigarette. Some of you are telling me about the levels of nicotine that you are using and that that's going down, down, down for you, too. John, I hate to say I feel bad for Juul, but they're taking the brunt in all of this, and it's not because of them. I know two people who quit because of Juul. John, they said nothing about Juul or nicotine vapes killing people. It's a joke. They are responding to a panic situation with panic. I was a smoker for 20 years. Thanks to Juul, I don't smoke. I spend a ton less money. I feel a ton better. These guys are a joke in making up stats. I go through one Juul pod every week. I used to smoke a pack a day. But the children excuse is getting old. And on it goes. John, I'm 53. This is from 847. Smoking cigarettes completely and quit smoking cigarettes completely using vaping. Slowly wean myself down to 0 milligrams of nicotine. I'm still vaping, though. And all of the texts, with a few exceptions, are like that. Tell me what your vaping experience is. Now, here's one, 815. I've tried the Juul instead of smoking, but it didn't actually help. I'd always go back to a cigarette. I also believe the liquids they are using is a poor quality, maybe not being regulated or quality controlled properly in the facilities. One of you said, John, I have 3 teenage daughters. I'm worried to death about vaping with recreational marijuana and how much higher the strains are of it. It's like putting death in their hands. Thanks a lot, Governor. One of you said you think you're smoking cigarettes more now because of vaping. But I've got pages here of people who said that you have used it, you have enjoyed it, and you have used it to help you get off of tobacco. John, I'm a 45-year-old male, smoked for 20 years, started vaping with flavors 10 years ago. I still do. I've been tobacco-free for 7 years. So that's a person who is smoking, and then at the age of 38, quit. They're now 45. Now, as a former smoker, I can't stand the smell of tobacco. I loathe being at my folks' house. My mom smokes, et cetera, et cetera. But just another, I'm not doing, I know the Juul is spending some money on this radio station. Their commercials are more, we're going to very closely monitor the age of people that are getting the vapes. But, you know, they aren't talking about some of these other issues. I'm not working for them, and we aren't here either. But I'm not sure I see the wisdom in all of this. Now, some of you have said, John, I can't believe you are saying that. This is crazy. Last few calls or texts at 312-981-7200. Could be you next. Oh, by the way, did you, over the weekend maybe, go to WGNradio.com/Teddy? If you bought your tickets to our Teddy Roosevelt show, it's really going to be good. It just seems like there's always new issues percolating up, new personalities. It's fun to hear Teddy Roosevelt, sometimes Thomas Jefferson. This fall we're doing Teddy Roosevelt, talk about some of our current situations and personalities and how they are like or not like them and what they would do or not do. And the history behind this man is just fascinating, too. He is easily our funniest president. He is easily our most energetic president. He's probably our best read and best written president. And he's also the one that most resembles the current president. It's a ball of fire on the stage. He walks up there. I talk to him for a little while. It's just an unrehearsed conversation. You ask questions, too. Have you done this before? You will thank me if you do. Go to WGNradio.com/Teddy. The show is going to be, the conversation is going to be October 12th at the Blizzard Theater. That's at Elgin Community College, October 12th. Can you join us? 10:30 in the morning. You'll be glad you did. And thanks to our friends at the Joint Relief Institute. They're sponsoring it. Oh, yeah, and get a load of this. After hearing the success that both Lou Manfredini and Steve Cochran have been having, my Saturday producer, Griffin, is going on the Seattle Sutton Healthy Eating Program, too. Now, for Griff, convenience is essential. He loves the fact that Seattle Sutton's Healthy Eating does all the work. Griff no longer has to grocery shop or meal plan. He never did. Cooking, cleaning pots, pans, quite frankly, thinking about what you eat, it's so easy because this is now like having a personal nutritionist and chef on staff for you. And the meals are delicious and nutritious and delivered right to his doorstep. Lots of variety, too. He was telling us about the pancakes he was having over the weekend, and that's on the program. This is the food that you should be eating for the rest of your life. Seattle Sutton's Healthy Eating is the most trusted name in healthy eating. 33 years, 90 million meals served. It works. Give it a try. There are 20-plus Chicagoland distributors where meals can be easily picked up or you can have it delivered to your door. That's what Griff's doing. Call 1-800-442-DIET. Try this now. 1-800-442-DIET. Visit SeattleSutton.com. Hey, Vicki, this is John. I got a minute. What did you want to say? You're on the air.
I want to know how many people that have given up cigarettes and gone to vaping could give up their vaping instead, because I tried that too, and I ended up with just another habit.
So what did you do? Did you go back to cigarettes then?
Yes, I did. Now I've once again, but without anything.
Wait a minute. Yes, I did. You cut out there. You said, yes, I did, and what happened?
Yes, I did go back to cigarettes for a while. And now I've completely quit smoking on my own.
Oh, hooray for you. But not as a result of the Juul, huh?
No, I did it without any of that because I was just doing another habit.
Yeah. That's interesting.
I substitute one thing for another, that's all.
Yeah, Vicki, thanks for the call. I don't know the answer to that. How many people who use that to stop smoking then can ever stop vaping? But to me, if I had to pick one over the other, wouldn't you pick the vaping? I haven't seen the statistics on that. I don't know. King John says this texter, it's sad that elected officials don't have the same outrage about gun control as they do vaping. P.S. I sent this message to Senator Raja Krishnamoorthy. John, just because vaping products are marketed to kids does not mean that they should be sold to them. Duh, I vape. I'm 64 years old. John, my wife went from smoking two packs a day, 21 milligrams of nicotine, two packs a day, to vaping 21 milligrams of nicotine vape juice. And now she's vaping 3 milligrams of nicotine vape juice. She feels sick now when she sells cigarette smoke. More and more of you are saying that. Okay, we break. You're right, Elif. It's 2:57. Into the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. The stories that matter. Plus, Ro, Anna, and whatever everybody has to say about the Bears game coming up. Ro Khan, Anna DeVlantis, hello.
Hi there, John. We are all set up for our show here with Ben Bradley. He's going to kick us off and talk a little more about Alderman Solis. I know you address this $95,000 a year pension that he's getting, which a lot of people sort of are horrified by, given what's going on there. We're going to talk a little bit about how that may or may not go away, depending on what happens, and some new information there. We've also got a fact check from WGN Investigates on Toni Preckwinkle. She's out and about talking about justice reform, as she has since she for quite some time now. But today, she has sort of gone down the list of how the county court bond program is working, and they fact check it, the changes to the bond program. Is it all adding up? Interesting report that you'll see on WGN TV tonight, but we're going to talk to Ben Bradley about that. Bob Baer, the most decorated agent in CIA history here, to talk about more about that drone attack on Saudi Arabia knocking out the oil supply. We're going to see gas prices go up 22 cents a gallon, they say, but more important than that, what's happening in our global affairs? What's the next move here, and how will the U.S. respond? How will everyone respond?
Yeah. I trust you'll also pepper the show with some mildly scattered hysteria over the Bears' win.
Oh, we got an OB. Ed Obradovich is going to join us.
Not only are we angry when they lose, I sensed that we were kind of ticked when we won.
Yeah, gosh, it's not exactly what you wanted to see, but we have a new hero in town, and that's a nice distraction. Eddie Pinero.
Very religious, too, huh?
Yeah, did you see that? He was
thanking the Lord.
And he was.
That's where he gets his power and all that. Hey, listen, whoever's on our side, if we can kick 53-yard field goals, I'm all for it.
Have at it. Have at it. He's our kicker. Thank you, John.
So long.